Hello and a very festive welcome to a very festive Section D, Monocle's weekly design show with me, Hugo MacDonald. It's just days till Christmas, so this week we're delving into the world of Christmas design. We're not talking tinsel and twinkly lights though, I promise. Though I won't lie, there will be some Christmas bells and maybe a bit of bad carol singing by yours truly along the way. Coming up, we head to Denmark to unwrap the magical world of Lego.
I didn't think a Lego designer was a job. I thought Lego was something I played with when I was a kid.
We peer through the Christmas windows of Bergdorf's in New York.
One of our biggest challenges is to maintain this distinctive style that we do at Bergdorf Goodman. No one else does holiday windows exactly like us.
And we sit down with Peter York to hear what Christmas means to him.
I've got boxes and boxes and boxes of really ancient Woolworths Christmas decorations and little glass doodahs.
All that to come. Plus, we take a peek on the Christmas wish lists of our favourite designers and report on a historic Christmas card company and a new wrapping paper company in Berlin. Welcome to a Christmassy Section D here on Monocle 24 with me, Hugo MacDonald. First up, it's time for a trip to the wintry wilds of Denmark. Any young architects in the making might be hoping to receive some Lego from Santa this year. The perfect cue for us to visit the historic Danish company's headquarters in Billund to see where the magic happens. We dispatched our reporter, Amanda Brown, to find out more.
I'd love to build a car with Lego.
It looks like a skeleton vehicle. It's got the skull on the front and sort of ribs running down the side of it. And when you drive it along, the front goes up and down and chomps.
William Thorogood is a Lego design director on playthemes for children aged 7+.
I didn't think a Lego designer was a job. I thought Lego was something I played with when I was a kid. And I hadn't thought that through, really. I've always been a huge fan of cars, and that came from building Lego cars when I was a child. And I thought, I'll be a car designer. So I went and studied a master's degree in car design. And as part of that, I had to do an internship, which I did at Lego. It came up as part of the companies that were looking for interns. A lot of the things are applicable from transport design. Obviously, you learn a lot about form and shape and how various graphics work together and all that kind of stuff, which you can apply directly to a model of a car, be it 20 centimetres long or full size. But I now have the freedom to make it look like a skeleton or put ridiculous engines and wheels on it or make it fly.
My name is Mads Nipper, and I'm the Chief Marketing Officer of the Lego Group. The trick is not just to continue to make bricks, but constantly renew. How appealing is it? How exciting is it? How can we use the system? How can we do something where kids just absolutely have to have this new thing? And we actually think both in the way we work, but also the way we get inspired. It is critically important to both be able to think as children and have huge amounts of consumer insight, not just via big reports, but also actually playing with children, getting the products into the hands, having the designers interact with children.
What is that you're going through there? Tiny, tiny little bits of plastic.
Yeah, we call it a plastic granulate. It's we have more than 25 different types of plastic that we use to produce Lego elements, but this one is the primary one. It's called ABS. So this is like the raw material for any Lego brick. And we take this and then we melt it, and it becomes like a tough dough or toothpaste. And then we squeeze it into a big mold where we cool it down, and out pops a Lego brick.
Rorud Tranbeck is Lego Communications Manager. He showed me round the small factory where individual Lego components become minifigures, buildings, animals, or one part of 1,000 different ideas.
We are in the processing department, so this is where after we have finished moulding the Lego bricks, the elements, we bring them here, we decorate them, we assemble them, and then they continue into the rest of the factory where we put them in the boxes. And as you can see here, there are three cliches. So this minifigure will be decorated with three layers of paint. In this case, it's a guy with sunglasses. First, you'll have the shades put on, the grey shades, then the glasses will come on, and then finally the mouth.
He looks like a cool dude.
I think he is, yeah. Probably, maybe a police officer, I don't know. He can become a lot of different things. We will only call that a minifigure head once it's been decorated, because otherwise it might as well be a decorative element in like a column for a Lego model or anything else that we could use it for.
But the whole raison d'etre of these little plastic bricks is to become part of a bigger whole. Not necessarily anymore just for children.
I'm gonna pick up the pieces and build a Lego house. If things go wrong, we can knock it down.
My name is Paul Smith-Meyer and I'm heading up the new business development at Lego. So.
Architecture and Lego make perfect sense, really, don't they? I'm just looking at a box you've brought along here. We're looking at very sort of sleek-looking design. So tell me a little bit about this. This is Willis Tower, Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, when I started a new business group, I started also a foundation of connecting to passionate entrepreneurs. And I met this guy in Chicago who was an architect who was building huge models out of Lego. And we basically, my proposition to him was, if we were to do architecture, it has to be with someone who like you. And that's why he launched 3 months later this limited edition, at that time it was called Sears Tower, box of Lego, made 250 pieces. And that's how our journey started, exploring architecture in, you know, you could say, basically celebrating architecture through the Lego brick. And we ended up with these very nice sets that are really about placing Lego brick within the space of architecture instead of taking architecture into the space of toy.
Architecture obviously is quite different to dogs and cats and ducks. And so when you came to designing it, did you still come to it with the child's play approach in mind?
I think we came in the perspective of how can we inspire people a little bit? How can we give them a little, open the door to architecture through something that initially is almost more like a souvenir model? But that's why, you know, each model comes with a booklet that has a little bit of the story behind. And as we go to the more, we call them the architecture line, where we're also doing Frank Lloyd Wright and Mies van der Rohe, there's many, many pages on the background of the building. And when you build, there's also sometimes a small anecdote from the architect relating to what you build. So you almost become, you get a little glimpse into the thinking and the journey. So when you finish building the Falling Water, like, yeah, I understand why Frank Lloyd Wright did it that way. So it's kind of, it's more than just play. It's becoming a little bit an experience.
But Lego's core market are still the type of people who drop bits of it on the carpet for grown-ups to step on.
They change their mind so quickly. Something that's cool now, in 6 months' time, will be out of fashion.
Do you dread your focus groups? You have seven-year-olds sort of throwing things at the wall saying, it's not good enough.
No, I think they're always fun because they always do things you don't expect. We had one recently where a boy had a spaceship, quite a big model. He looked at it and went, does it fly? And then threw it. And it just shattered into a million pieces on the floor. Looking back, it's funny. And it's whenever you show anything to kids, you get that kind of, they play with it in the weirdest ways and they hold it in somewhere you really don't want them to because that's the place it will break. So you know where you can make it stronger and make the play better for them, and that's kind of why we do it. We want to give them the best play experience they can possibly have when they get at home.
Amongst many new developments to look out for from Lego are The Life of George, a game that combines solid Lego bricks and building with an app on your smartphone, and possibly a link up with the massively popular online game Minecraft. It may just start with a brick, but Lego is building.
Comme un Lego avec des mains. Comme un Lego.
That was Amanda Brown at the headquarters of Lego in Billund, Denmark. Time for a short break, but stay tuned. We'll be asking the great and good of design what they want and what they want to give this Christmas.
This Christmas, why not give the gift of Monocle? A Monocle subscription spreads happiness and cheer throughout the year. Our special gift subscription is for only the most deserving recipients. The first issue comes hand-wrapped in Monocle design paper with an accompanying welcome letter which announces your gift and a personal message should you so wish. Subscribe now and we'll also send the new exclusive tote bag for 2011 for the first few issues. Our 12-month gift subscription costs £80 sterling, including magazine delivery costs to anywhere in the world. The recipient of your gift will receive 10 issues of the magazine and also 12 months access to all of our online content at monocle.com. So whether they've been naughty or nice, why not give them the gift of Monocle?
Welcome back to Section D on Monocle 24 with me, Hugo MacDonald. In celebrating all things Christmas, we thought it appropriate to visit some of our favourite characters in the design world and ask what's on their Christmas wish list. First up, it's Kim Collin from Industrial Facility.
I am really looking forward to this holiday season. The best thing that could happen in the holidays for me is to actually go away and make a break in my very hard-working routine. It seems like all year we work hard to take a break in December, and it's well-earned, and we really do get away and get a different perspective. So that's the greatest gift, I think, to me. And this year, in terms of giving gifts for the holiday season and in terms of celebrating the holidays, in helping others to also appreciate what they have and acknowledge what they have, I think that's a really important thing to do at this time of year. I've thought of two things to give. They kind of are extreme. One is to give things that are very long-lasting and permanent, so things that are very special, invested products that will be around for a long time. Things that are really lasting. Not necessarily luxury items, they could be educational toys, they could be things that are important at a moment but will still resonate in time, and things you'll want to live around for a long time. And the other extreme is to give gifts that actually don't last at all. They are pure experience or enjoyment, and then they're over. So they're very traditional ideas, like eating a jar of jam from berries that were picked in the summer is always an amazing thing, to open a pot of jam, especially in this country when it's so dark in the wintertime, to open a jar of sunshine and then for that to be gone. That was it. That was the experience. It's over. I think there's sometimes we have too many things around, and it's nice to actually finish a jar of jam and get rid of it, and that's it. Top two things on my wish list this year are fall into those two categories. The thing that has longevity is a watch for myself. That's something I would look at every day. Even though I have a smartphone that I can look at every day and see the time, I still look at my wrist. And I look there, I find myself looking there for something which has meaning, I guess. And I'm now, maybe because I'm at this age, I want something that is not disposable, so to speak. I want something that's going to be there now and has some permanence and is a piece that I can pass down as well. The second thing I'd like to receive this year falls into the experience category, and that would be when I'm away on holiday, to be given a day just to be with my family in a very special place. That's going to be outside by the sea, where the mountains run right up to the sea, as far away from London as possible, as far away from my daily life as possible, just enjoying the outdoors.
That was Kim Collin in her London studio. Time now to head to Berlin, where our reporter Mar Sellers called on a new design agency making a splash with some very tasteful designs for wrapping paper, gift tags and Christmas cards. In a world that's saturated with cheap paper stock and gimmicky images, Pleased to Meet is a very welcome addition.
Hi, my name is Marcel Hornung from Pleased to Meet in Berlin, and we are producers of high-quality paper products. We've been doing this for about 1.5 years, and our main items are greeting cards, wrapping paper, and actually we see ourselves less as a true paper company. That's the core of our business currently, but we see ourselves more as a lifestyle company. This year we have designed a whole line with gondola motifs, and man pulling sled is one of the others. They all go pretty well. Man pulling sled, when I describe it, it's a Parisian townhouse full of goodies and Christmas ornaments, and there's a little guy pulling a sled. And as I describe it, all of the motifs really tell a story. Last year we had a bright red Citroën DS, which is kind of a design icon. And actually, interestingly enough, of course, it's a lot of men who order that design, or women who buy it for their husbands. So our showroom, as we call it, is in Berlin Mitte. It's pretty much the only place where you'll find the entire collection. Well, the people who come in here is quite interesting. Since we are in Berlin Mitte, which is sort of the, I would say, the most hyped up area in Berlin, with most of the galleries and fancy stores, a lot of people walk past our studio towards Bernauer Street, which is really where the old part of the old wall stood, and they have a so-called Mauermuseum, which is the museum about the Berlin Wall. And so we have a very international audience who come by every day. And for us, it's really perfect because we can kind of do an international market analysis with them. There are Koreans coming in, there are Australians, Americans, British people. So they're really people from all over the world, and gives us a pretty good feeling which products work well in which countries, and what the consumer behavior is, and how different it really is culturally. One interesting fact, for example, and that's just one of the things we found out, is that sets like box sets of cards, they work very well in English-speaking countries like in Great Britain or in the US or in Australia. And when we came here, all of the retailers immediately told us, well, sorry, we can't sell boxes. And we do realize that when the Germans come in here, or the Dutch, they don't want to buy boxes. They want to buy their individual cards, and they'd rather come back once a week and just buy one or two cards, and they are happy to come back every single time, and they come in for a chat and then they leave again, which is a very different mentality, but it's great. I think in Germany, the paper market is really, unfortunately and fortunately for us, is behind, I would say, on an international scale. So a lot of the cards you'll find here are, not very nicely designed, but it's also people have forgotten to really write cards in general. People have been writing emails now more and more, but it's also that the paper culture in Germany really was never as it is and was in the UK, for example, where there are really a ton of reasons to write cards and to keep in touch. And I think especially nowadays with all the floods of emails and the spam folders overflowing, there is even more demand to really stand out and really sit down and write a personal note. And I see a resurgence somewhat in certain niches of the paper market.
That was Mar Sellers in Berlin with the lovely folk at Pleased to Meet. Welcome back to a Christmas special of Section D with me, Hugo MacDonald. Our New York editor, Aisha Spears, on a quest to send her Christmas greetings in beautiful cards, visited a small company in Syracuse called Smock. She found just what she was looking for.
So this is Smockville. I'll let Jen talk about
Smockville. I love. Oh, this is cool. It's like this whole wall of printed boxes. I love this. Okay, tell me about Smockville.
All right. Smock started with the everyday cards. They started with the bamboo paper, and it's all letterpress. So these are our cards.
Okay.
And we have a variety of gift tags, folded notes, social notes, greeted cards. And each colorway, or the combination of colors, we call a suite. So they all coordinate with the matching envelopes.
Okay.
And we, I don't know, we have probably like 17, something like that, 25, something like that, suites now.
This is so neat.
Yeah, we have holiday suites, and then there's like regular everyday.
How many, say for the holiday, mm-hmm. which is the holiday section?
I have some down here. This whole suite, the red and green, is holiday. As blue and purple is holiday.
Oh, gorgeous.
Pink and green is holiday. So this is Fete, Merry, and Pageant.
Okay. Yeah, these have names?
Yep. It's the name of the suite that okay. we call it.
Okay.
And then these are offset printed. These actually have... Some of these have greetings on the inside.
Yep, it's
there. Oh, they're gorgeous. And so how many did you start with? Say for the holiday, do you know like how it developed? Oh, are these all the holiday ones up here?
When I started, it started less than 2 shelves.
Okay.
And that was almost 3 years ago.
And so how is this made?
These are all letterpress on bamboo paper.
Okay.
The offset is... We change it to PCW paper because the offset printing process comes out smoother. The bamboo is almost like mountainy. It's like a...
You kind of get
a suede look, and it's...
If you want to feel the difference, I mean...
Yep, here's a... This is bamboo.
Then the texture of this one and the printing is much different. Like, this has the actual impression.
Okay.
If you can see it pressed into the paper, whereas this is just kind
yeah,
of
like,
flat.
There's a good card.
And the bamboo paper, tell me about that. That's something you guys... do yourselves?
The bamboo paper comes from Germany.
Okay.
Was where the paper mill is, but the bamboo paper is specially made for us.
Of the wrapping paper, the cards and the boxes, what do you feel like people start buying more of than normal for Christmas?
Gift wrap goes like crazy, but the boxes are always popular.
Let's go through these. It's quite an entrance going through these into
the press shop.
Ooh, it smells nice.
It does.
Kathy, you want to talk about the press shop?
I can.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm Aisha.
I'm Kathy.
Lovely to meet you.
You too. This is a press room. We have 8. 10 Heidelberg, 12 Heidelberg windmills, and most of the time they're going all day long. We have different shifts, so they start at 6 in the morning, they go to 6 at night. But we love the Heidelberg windmills, and if you ever see one operate and you see the paper wrapper going around, you kind of get the idea for why they have a windmill name. And then we also have Heidelberg cylinders. They're just larger machines, and they operate a little bit differently, but we love our Heidelbergs.
And what are the windmills print? Are they printing the cards? They're printing the letterpress print.
Yeah, printing smaller. They have their smaller space to print.
Okay.
So we use them most of the time. These are for larger die-cut projects, like big folders, and we need to do a huge quantity, so we want to do multiples at a time.
And what's that I can smell? Is that ink?
Ink.
It's a really distinctive.
Yep.
Smell.
Ink and probably not solvents. Our solvents really have no smell.
Okay.
But mostly inks, yes. And oil. They're always oiling the machines.
And how specialist do you have to be to use one of these Heidelberg windmills?
Well, it's kind of funny. We kind of have an evolution of printers. When we first started out, we took printmaking students from SU and taught them how. And then we took people like Carrie, who's our only female printer and our oldest printer, and she had an interest in it, and we taught her. But then we had a huge growth, and we needed printers fairly quickly. So the remaining people here who are men, they were digital and offset printers, and we brought them in and we taught them letterpress.
And how do they like? Is it like?
Love it.
Yeah,
love
I can
it.
Imagine.
It's a whole different tactile. It's more of them and less the machine, and so.
Yeah. And so it goes kind of one. So I see that he's printing one color, and then does he pass that on to her to do another color?
No, he'll do the whole thing. Ah. Yep. He'll get the whole job. However many multiple colors, he'll get a bin with paper and the job, and then he'll do all the colors and all the.
So you basically own.
Yep.
The car
you own that job. Yep.
That's great.
Exactly. It's not like a place where you let them run and you walk away. They're stopping. They're checking. This one up here is the one that they're looking at. That's considered their perfect example. They're always comparing against that one. So every 5 or 6, they're comparing, and if they have to, they'll stop and make adjustments. So that's the labor-intensive part of it.
Are these antique machines? Are they being still made?
60s, 50s, 60s. They're not made anymore.
Really?
50s and 60s. You can still get parts for them, but they're not made anymore.
I love them.
They're not making letterpress anymore. There's a couple of people who are making their own versions of it, but none of these are being made anymore.
And for Christmas, because we're coming into the Christmas period, does it you know, how many people are, do you bring new people on to take on the Christmas cards?
No, no.
Same people?
Same people.
And how much of the percentage, is there a percentage shift of you guys making Christmas cards over the normal cards?
Oh, yeah, probably, oh gosh, probably 50% of the jobs are at least Christmas.
Really?
Yeah.
And when does that production cycle go through in the year?
They start, cards will start second week in December, in November.
Okay.
And peak right around Thanksgiving and peak now until, we'll get orders a few days before Christmas.
Oh, really?
We will.
That was our New York editor, Aisha Spears, in Syracuse with Smock. And from New York State to the familiar streets of London, it's time to hear what fashion designer Oliver Spencer is hoping to find under his Christmas tree.
Christmas, if you're a retailer, is a really mad time of year, and I always look forward to Christmas. We've got this constant flow of people coming into the shop, buying presents, and it's a good thing. And then I've got three little boys, so buying presents for them is great fun. I'm going to give my wife a new pair of Tom Ford sunglasses as I sat on hers in October. So it looks like I'm paying for some lovely sunglasses. And I'm going to give a friend of mine one of our sheepskin jackets because he's worked tirelessly this year for us. And then probably more kids stuff, probably like a Scare Electric and things like that. I'd quite like a new Patagonia jacket. Yeah, that would be good. I need a new watch because mine's broken, but it's probably quite a big ask. It's an Omega, so I've got to try and gently sort of showing that to someone at the moment. And you know what, other than that, I want to improve my record collection, so I want some iTunes vouchers. One of the things I really enjoy about Christmas Day is that I spend it with my 2-year-old and I spend it with my 100-year-old grandfather. So I have this kind of complete generational thing and everyone in the middle on Christmas Day, and that's a pretty amazing experience.
That was Oliver Spencer in his London studio. Time to check in with our fourth designer to hear what they'd like for Christmas. We're heading to Beirut to meet Hoda Baroudi.
What I would like to give this Christmas is something a bit, something you cannot put your hand on. It's something, an experience. I just came back from a trip to, 4-day trip to Copenhagen. And the reason I went there is that a friend called me up and said, I managed to get you a table at NOMA. And we grabbed the opportunity and went. And we didn't expect anything, we didn't know anything, and we just knew that this René recipe is a whiz with food. To be honest, the whole thing was not about food. It was about living. It's about transporting you to another reality. It touched my eyes, my ears, my nose, my sensory. Everything was working. Everything was working. And for me, it's a precious present to give anybody. I happened to become friends with, we became friendly with the guy who takes reservations, and I might have a reservation that I would like to pass on for this Christmas to a friend. Now, I would like to get many things for Christmas. I'm a very greedy person, you see, and I have, I'm not greedy, of course, it's just that I have my eyes set on many things. But there was this special thing that I saw on my way back. I mean, Saturday, I was at Merci, the store in Paris, and I saw this box of 40 films compiled by a young boy. And they're selling them as boxes of films, I think, for Christmas. I happened to look through them, and I saw, like, 8 films that I treasure. One of them was Eraserhead of David Lynch. So I said, my God, this young boy, and I wanted so much to get that box, but then it was a trouble to bring it back and stuff. So that was something that I thought, nice to get for Christmas. Another thing that is really, I was debating whether to, I want this more of the, or that, and that being to see the roofs of Beirut all planted. Because there was this guy, apparently, who visited Beirut. His name, I'll remember his name in a minute. And he apparently thought, what a pity, you don't have greenery in the city. And he came up with this plan to plant the roofs of the city. And he had really the whole thing planned for, how to approach the municipality, what plants work on ceilings and stuff. And he presented it, and I received it as a mail. It's circulating in the city. And I would like very much to receive from somebody a note telling me that this is going ahead and that I'll be on the committee.
That was our reporter Daisy Moore with Hoda Baroudi in Beirut.
Monocle 24 より Merry Christmas.
Feliz Navidad de Monocle 24.
Frohe Weihnachten von Monocle 24.
圣诞快乐 从 Monocle 24.
Joyeux Noël de la part de Monocle 24.
Καλά Χριστούγεννα από το Monocle 24.
Dale da Monocle 24.
Welcome back to Section D here on Monocle 24 with me, Hugo MacDonald. Now, nothing says Christmas like a festive window display. But as we're all realising, it's becoming a bit of a sorry situation as retailers big and small promote their sales bargains instead of creating a festive scene to draw customers in. There are, of course, a few notable exceptions. And we dispatched our reporter, Hazel Pfeiffer, to Liberty Department Store in London to hear how they've dressed their windows for the festive season.
I'm Maxine Grokert, Head of Visual Identity at Liberty. We start planning windows around about January of that year, and everything's usually signed off by March. It's a huge part of the retailing year. It's hugely important. So it needs lots of planning, lots of time, lots of attention. And there's obviously, you know, we have to be in line with budgets. We have to consider kind of ordering and allowing for enough time to get things from all over the world. For example, in this year's scheme, we had to get puppets from India. So we had to make sure we had enough time for them to be made and to be shipped over here. So there's lots of considerations in what we do. This year we decided to go for the 12 days of Christmas, a countdown to the one big day. And really this scheme started out as, first of all, taking the song, 12 days of Christmas, and then adding into it how we could then take the products and the different elements from our store and incorporate that into the scheme. So I went actually on a lovely weekend to the beautiful Berlin and got loads of inspiration from there. And that's where a lot of the elements came from in terms of how to create this kind of really wintry, very rich, very opulent, beautiful kind of feel to the windows of rich carpets and curtains and metallics, and then incorporating that into the overall theme to give that people the feeling of that Liberty is luxury. And it's luxury, accessible luxury, so there's lots of things in the window that people can buy into, but there's still something special here and something you won't get anywhere else on the high street. The Christmas windows, I'd say, is really important. And we had people who phoned up customer services in November to plan their Christmas trip to London just to see the windows. And that's, you know, so that becomes a big part of it's actually, you know, taking in the whole experience, the whole shopping experience of engaging people and bringing them into store and exciting them with the products and the display and how it's put together. So I think it's hugely important. And Liberty has such a rich history in its Christmas windows. And there's people that visit year after year after year to see what we're doing. We wanted Liberty Christmas windows to be more traditional and have a real family appeal. I think that people in difficult times, feel that family is very important, that, you know, it's buying for your loved ones. It's not just going out and purchasing any item. And Liberty is especially very much like that. We edit product beautifully and people come in and select from that product for people that they love. So we went for a traditional scheme because we thought that actually that does bring that nostalgia back to it's just about the true core values of Christmas. So the windows start from the Regent Street end of the store and work through, and there's some elements that we weren't able to put into the song, but we've kind of, I think, got the overall essence of the overall scheme. So we actually start at 11 Pipers Piping, where we have these sort of little Indian puppets that go up and down on little rotors throughout the window just to kind of stop people and engage people at this stage. And these are really sweet because these were sourced from India and we wanted just the pipers. But because they're love puppets, they have to be sold with men and women. So it's unlucky. It means that you won't find true love. So we had to put them all in the window, which was, I think was really charming. The mannequins are very much dressed out in kind of like a military sort of feel to them with kind of plated armour mixed with really rich sequins and embroidery. And so that the whole feeling is kind of quite masculine, but still on a feminine kind of level. We have our carpets, which we have from our beautiful carpets department on the third floor, and then these trunks overspilling with male-inspired products for, you know, for the perfect gift for the man in your life. So the windows are really kind of opulent, and they really kind of have that feeling of sort of being abroad at Christmas. And they've got these kind of rich burgundies and mustards and greens in it, with then highlights of these kind of incredible, with the love puppets, the incredible turquoises. So this window is on the second day of Christmas my true love gave to me. And in this window we have this beautiful white sleigh, and you have the doves pulling the sleigh, which kind of brings in the song that we've actually, or the narrative that we've chosen. In this, the mannequin is very rich, velvety reds with creams and whites and beige all the way through it. So it's got a real snowy, wintry scheme to it, this window, with the red Baroque curtains coming down. And trying to get in the fake furs and the rich wools, it was very cosy, but also extremely glamorous. We've had an incredible reaction to the windows so far. It's been really amazing. When we were installing them, people were trying to peek behind the blinds to see what we were doing. And they really have, you know, on the first couple of days we unveiled, we saw lots of people trooping through. And if you come here on a Saturday, you see hordes of people stood outside the windows and families looking at the windows together and parents pointing out little details and the children noticing little things that perhaps the parents haven't noticed and pointing them out. So it's very fulfilling when you go to all of the effort to put this together and you plan it for a year, that you get those kind of reactions. And most importantly, it's that it draws people into store. If they see one thing in the window, it will draw them into store, and then it's up to the rest of the team to deliver and give them what they want.
That was Hazel Pfeiffer for Monocle with Maxine Grucut, Head of Visual Identity at Liberty in London. Time now for our final designer check-in. Here's Danish damsel Nina Tolstrup of Studio Mama telling us what she's hoping to find under her tree.
The problem with Christmas is that I'm not totally a fan of the whole present giving and receiving presents. I must admit that. I do love the food, the tradition, the decoration. That part of Christmas I'm very fond of. But we got a family with loads of kids, and the kids are always easy and a big pleasure to give presents, because of course Christmas is such a time for the children. And as I'm not a good shopper, I must admit that most of that is bought online. A lot of the grown-ups, we are that grown-up that we don't give each other presents. The grown-ups that I give presents are mostly likely to get some of my own designs, which is a recurrent thing every year. There's always something that's been made during the year, so they seem to like it, and it makes it very easy for me. This year I made a piece of jewelry that's called Two Lines of Love, together with Jacqueline Raben, and that's two lines of silver. This kind of self-forming bracelets, and they are being sold in Dover Street Market and Philips de Prius Gallery. Another thing that I really like in terms of presents is giving experiences. It could be anything for a day out with some kind of arranged event, or evening in the cinema, or some kind of creating a day or an evening that is special between people that you like. I like to think that that is a nice present to give, and that's also what I like to receive. And my husband and I, we don't give each other presents, but we always create a nice, memorable day or evening, a moment, which I think is the best present to get. I must say, I mean, that is the terrible problem also when I'm asked what I do like to have for Christmas. I find that painfully difficult. Of course, a nice book is always appreciated, but I'm not that keen of receiving presents, and I have a bad habit of buying what I like, and at the moment that I like, and I'm also not a very big consumer of things, and I'm very particular of what I want to buy and what I like to receive as such. So it's a kind of feeling often quite ungrateful, and I'm also being quite clear about that. I would actually prefer not to receive presents. Of course, I have a big community of designers around me. Not that we give each other presents for Christmas, but presents for other reasons. It's fantastic when people make the effort to make something, any kind of things, including for my kids, but people that would, whether that it's baking or making something in terms of food, but of course, I mean, something where people had put their own time and effort into it is absolutely lovely, and that is things that I treasure in my house. anything that is made by people's own imagination is a treasure.
That was Nina Tolstrup of Studio Mama.
Monocle is strapping on its skis, pulling on its mittens, and heading to the mountains for the launch of our winter resort paper, Monocle Alpino. This large format paper takes you to the snowy highs of Slovenia and Sochi and discovers a little piece of Italy marooned in Switzerland. It also offers glowing reads, homes to encourage you to build an alpine roost, hearty recipes, and puffed-up cozy fashions for heading out in a snow flurry. We also go on rescue missions in Iceland and find the ultimate mountain cinemas and newspapers. Monocle Alpino is on sale now, and it's the perfect companion for a fireside moment. Tack!
Welcome back to Section D, here on Monocle 24 with me, Hugo MacDonald. Department store decoration during Christmas is a very competitive business in New York. And nowhere is the battle more fierce than on Fifth Avenue. Some of the most anticipated windows in the city belong to Bergdorf Goodman. And our New York editor, Aisha Spears, met with David Hoey. He's headed up the department store window designs for 15 years. And she went to find out how the Carnival of the Animals theme came together this year.
This is David Hoey, Senior Director of Visual Presentation at Bergdorf Goodman. I'm starting to take you on a tour of our holiday windows. We do five streets of windows. We have two stores, the women's store and the men's store, directly across the street. And we have five windows that usually get most of the attention, and they take the cake as far as production goes. The five tall windows on Fifth Avenue take up about 80% of our whole Christmas effort, and in turn, doing holiday windows is about 60% of our entire resources and effort over the year, whole course of the whole year.
Is there a theme that goes across all five streets of windows? How does that work?
The theme is one of the most important things because we try to find a theme that we can get five streets of windows out of, that's broad enough and is festive enough. And we choose a theme that is not too traditional either, believe it or not. Each store in New York, all the main department stores, and then all of the smaller stores that do holiday windows, each one of them has a distinctive style. It's one of our biggest challenges is to maintain this distinctive style that we do at Bergdorf Goodman. No one else does holiday windows exactly like us. Our holiday windows tend to fall into two different types. Some of them use antiques and collectibles and curiosities that we collect over a long period of time. And others of them are props and sets that we've made, but we've using old world techniques, I guess you could say. So they hold their own against the antiques and some of the other windows. Right now we're standing on Fifth Avenue, across the street from the women's store, and you can see the five big windows here are each one of them completely different from the others. This is another one of our trademarks. We're totally obsessive about materials. And then as we get closer to these windows, I'm going to talk to you about our stable of artists that we've collected over the years.
Let's go over to the windows.
This year's theme, Carnival of the Animals, inspired us to do five different windows using five completely different materials. So we have a wooden window, a paper sculpture window, a textile window, a metal window, and one that's made out of Italian mosaic tile. Five obsessively worked over windows. Right now we're standing in front of a window that's completely made out of paper sculpture.
I love this.
This has become one of our specialties, I think. Paper sculpture is a traditional window display material because it's inexpensive. And display departments traditionally have to do a lot with a little, budget-wise. Paper sculpture being a traditional window display material, I think we've taken it to an extreme here because, once again, a year in the making, five different paper sculptors working on this separately in different locations.
So, Carnival of the Animals. What am I looking at right now? We're on the right on the corner of 58th and 5th. What window is this?
Every one of these windows on the up Fifth Avenue takes a different approach to that Carnival of the Animals theme. This one is entirely wooden and leather antique animals. This particular window that we're, the first one, is in, subtitled Artists and Models. So we've got a mannequin in the window that it is supposed to be a sculptor, and she's surrounded by dozens or hundreds of wooden and leather animals. This collection of animals about taken about a year or two to pull together. We like to reuse props and bring them back. We're lucky. We have these windows are some of the tallest in the world, the tallest display windows in the world, 13 and a half feet tall by about 11 feet wide, 4 feet deep. We use every trick to try to fool the eye into having you think they're deeper than they really are.
What's the most fun part for you? What do you enjoy most? Because I know a lot of people get enjoyment from looking at them. But in terms of putting them together, what's the most wonderful thing about it?
That's a good question, yeah.
That's what it is. What it's is. The surprising compositions that happen. We're not just famous for our collections and the things that we collect. It's also how we show them. And it's all... That's where a lot of the magic comes in, because you don't really know how things are going to get put together until you're in the window, and there's a lot of fun in that.
That was Aisha Spears on the snowy streets of New York. Now Christmas is a time for family and friends, and we've heard from many of them throughout the show. Time for just one more. I sat down with Peter York in Midori House recently, where we chatted Christmas past and present over a mug of mulled wine.
Maybe I can start by asking why you've never decorated your home at Christmas.
I've never decorated my home at Christmas because I'm not expecting anybody to go there. Because I think at Christmas and New Year's and so on, I'm going to be enjoying the kindness of others. Not the kindness of strangers, but the kindness of others. I know I'm going to Dorset for Christmas and to Oxford for New Year, and I'm expecting their houses to be done up to the nines.
But that was going to be my next question, actually. Yes. Is it an aversion to Christmas decorations that you have, or is it
no,
just...
I have no aversion to Christmas decorations. No fact, I've got boxes and boxes and boxes of really ancient Woolworths Christmas decorations and little glass doodahs per chains, and then you lick
no,
them.
No, I know exactly. You and make, spent childhoods doing that.
Yes, and it's lovely.
I always think that at this time of year when people do open their doors to others... you can tell a lot about somebody from the way that they decorate their homes at Christmas. And people that you would expect to have very good taste suddenly bring out the pink and white fluorescent tinsel.
And it's nice, isn't it?
Well,
where
nice.
Did I go yesterday? That most lovely tree, flickering light.
People go up in your estimations when you see that they have the ability to decorate their homes tastefully.
It shows that they've got, well... I'm assuming that they haven't got a person in to do it.
Well, that's the new thing, isn't it? Hiring somebody to decorate your house.
Oh, come on. Get real.
It surprises me, though, then, if you appreciate it, that you don't do it just for yourself. I look forward to, at the beginning of December, getting out my Christmas decorations and my lights and putting up a tree as part of the ritual of just being a bit festive and indulgent. And I quite relish the fact that I know that nobody's going to be enjoying this except me.
Somebody came now and said, now, tomorrow, we're going to... dig in the archive. We're going to find these lovely, tasteless Christmas lights, and we're going to give you a tree, and we're going to do it. I'd be thrilled. How lovely that would be. Alas, I am leaving my beautiful home around the corner to plunge into the slums.
The slums of London?
Yes.
Well, not quite the slums. You were telling me that it was Pimlico.
Well... it's all relative, isn't it? It's all relative.
Are you a Christmas dinner or a Christmas lunch person?
On the day, in practice, there's very little difference, isn't there? The whole thing fades.
Well, I don't know. I've always, again, I've been brought up to think that Christmas dinner, having it at
is better.
8 o'clock is, yes, maybe a bit more sophisticated. We were never allowed to watch television as children.
Well, you're obviously, not you're on Christmas obviously day. Over-refined.
And tell me about Christmas of your youth.
Well, it was sort of mixed about godliness, but we'd go to Hampstead Parish Church in W3, and it is at Hampstead Parish Church, people of the universe. I can't urge Hampstead Parish Church on you more. It's pretty inside, and because it's Hampstead, it's got good music. And the choir is very good. To me, that thing, which they always start off with, I'm trying to think what it is, because it's a fantastically popular carol in Hampstead Parish Church. And it's a fantastically popular carol, and it then starts, and he leads these people on to the place where he is gone. And that, I think, is really quite...
Can you sing it?
No.
And he leads his people on to the place where he is gone.
And what a perfect way to end. That's all we've got time for on this week's Section D. Today's show was produced by Gillian DeBias. Our researchers were Taya Erdl and Hazel Pfeiffer, and our editor was Lolita Laguna. I'm Hugo MacDonald, and all that remains is to wish you a very, very happy Christmas and New Year. Thank you for listening.